so much.
Good evening. I'm really happy to be here, and thank you, Shpela, Bobby, and Gia for your very kind introduction. Am I speaking loud now? Yeah? Just a bit? Yeah? I'm really happy to be here. Thank you for inviting me. I was at first a bit skeptical about trash, because not only because it's not my primary, let's say, research area, but then again, my work revolves around media and memory and history and philosophy of technology. So I found some, you know, relations between trash and all these topics that I'm interested in personally. And of course, the fact is that we all live in a world that is increasingly drowning in trash. So, and I'm really happy for this challenge, and I hope you will find this presentation clear. If any bit you find confusing, or, you know, let me know right at the point, so and we can resolve stuff. And if you have any comments or stuff, do feel free to interrupt, and, you know, so we can try to break the barrier. So, my talk, I'll try to keep it short and clear. Roughly, it's structured around obviously trash and memory, but thinking about that, trash becomes a really elusive concept as well as object. For that reason, I will first give you a sort of a preset question that kind of provides the structure of my talk, and also a bit of a sort of techno-historical background to how we got where we are now. And then towards the end, I will try to steer the talk towards art and trash, which will open the floor for a reconstruction. So, as I was mentioning, we live in a world that is running in trash, but it was not always like so. For a long, long time, all living creatures in the world did obviously produce what we would call today trash or garbage or waste. The thing was that for the most part, this was entirely organic trash, which means it was able to decompose. It was able really to sustain the metabolical cycle of life on Earth. With industrialization, of course, this changed. And it changed in as much that humans began to produce stuff that does not degrade, that does not decompose, that remains for a long, long time on our planet. And this today we see causes a problem, and perhaps 200 years ago people did not see that as a problem. But the fact is that the vast amounts of stuff that we throw away ends up in landfills, in rivers, in the seas. And this bears really, really great consequences for life on our planet. In general, breaking, in fact, the metabolic cycle, seeping into food chains, and also into bodies. Trash, in a way, is really becoming an existential problem, not only for humans, but for planet Earth as a whole. And it will take imagination, expertise, and also a lot of energy. And I'm not talking just about physical energy, but also energy to engage stuff. So now, but before we move on, I would like first to make sort of like a disclaimer. I'm only going to speak today. There will be no visuals in my part of the the presentation, and this is deliberate because I wanted, because trash is so visually appealing, and I wanted to actually set up a situation where we are not distracted by images of trash, but rather try to think about it. So, and now this is a point where I would like to invite you to think about words. So we're doing sort of like an exercise in sort of like a mental word map of trash. So, and this brings also the question of obviously languages, and we are here very diverse in polylinguistic group, which I find really stimulating. So I would also like to build on that and, you know, expand this web of words related to trash, you know, to include as many as possible. Feel free to just jot down whatever word comes into your mind, and then maybe later on we can try to map that on a piece of paper or something. For instance, to start, we're speaking a lot about trash, and this is an English word. Probably it's more American English, and British would say rubbish. And then there is also garbage, and then there's waste. And in Slovenian we have odpadek, smet, and then in Italian you have, I don't know, how do you imagine? And that's interesting because I can only remember smeti and odpadki in Slovenian, and I'm not sure now if there's any other words, so which means we really either don't give shit about that, or we are in fact really clear. But that's up for discussion. Okay, so these are like words that are immediately related to trash, garbage, whatever. Obviously, there are other words that are related to whatever we do in life, and also whatever we do with trash. For instance, it's excrement, it's plastics, it's organic, it's inorganic. It's the question of industrialization, modernity, heritage and culture, ecology, obviously, ephemerality, obsolescence. So there's a whole lot of words that kind of weave the web of how trash is built into our environment, but also into our lives, but also into our bodies. And for me, in this talk, I found interesting a couple of words that kind of circumscribe what I want to do here today. So one is trace, also text also, but obviously also history. So there is a number of questions that I came up with a view to structure the whole, and the first obviously is, what is trash? What is it made of? And then the second question would be, what makes trash trash? Okay? And then the final question that I would like to pose is, what can we find out through trash about our lives in the world and so on, but also about the past, the present, and the future. In other words, how trash works as a mnemonic agent. But first, as I was also already saying in the beginning, all life produces waste. And this can be in terms of excrement, dead bodies, bodily fluids, and also not so fluid stuff that comes out of the body. CO2, methane, leaves that fall off trees and decompose. So there is a lot of, as I was saying, this organic waste. But and here just a brief note maybe. Waste is obviously very, very much culturally contaminated, because nobody would think of that fallen leaves as waste, obviously, because they are part of the metabolic cycle. It is our activity that makes leaves, makes this waste, and it is our way of life in West Europe, or Western world in general. We kind of find problem with leaves in particular, and they're blowing the leaves off paths and off parks and stuff like that. So, and here we also see this very, well, not that very old, but let's say a couple of hundred years old consequences of human and nature division that came in modernity. So, and up until human societies became sedentary, that is, let's say roughly 10,000 years ago, more or less, and when cities began to develop and stationary cultures, that's when waste becomes a problem, because you cannot just move away, you have to live in the very place where you also, you know, dispose of waste. And this creates hygienic problems in medical problems as well, and especially, you know, that in early settlements, people and animals would live together in the same houses or places, and that created another level So, and with the sedentarization of life, waste becomes a problem. This is also a time that narratives of pollution become important part of everyday life and of culture as well. And we know from Rome, ancient Rome, for instance, that there were debates about how water is, this is completely gone. You know, we're losing our water sources. Obviously, compared to today, it is nothing, but nevertheless, there was this really, really strong idea that is, in a way, also a generational thing, and it goes all the way up to history, up until today. And I'll come back to that later on, also in relation to technology. But we also tend to think that we live in a world that's the pinnacle of all. So this is the ultimate stage. We know, obviously, there is some kind of future, but, you know, from our perspective, this is it. So the Romans thought that their world is polluted. Similarly, although for very objective facts, in the Middle Ages, you would also have a problem with pollution, stuff was thrown out, windows and stuff like that. And even in very mid to late 18th or 19th century in New York, there were like hundreds of cars taking garbage out of New York. And the garbage are primarily stuff that, you know, kind of secretly taken away in sewage, which means that sewage was, again, a solution that kind of helped us get rid of and not being seen. So these positions of waste, obviously, is a sort of almost like the other, right? So you want to get it out of it. And it was not really, as I was saying, until very late 19th century, that organic waste was disposed through sewage. But the problem really started, as I was also mentioning, in the beginning with the problem of the really, really great change that occurred in this traveling through the history of waste came with, obviously, with industrialization. With the industrialization, there was the problem is on many levels. There was a lot of new materials invented, and not only a lot of new materials, because each single object could be produced. And oh,
endlessly, sorry. Which means that we get mass production of stuff. We get also mass consumption. And the problem is that a lot of this stuff was non-decomposable. So it would remain. And that's also the time when people also realize that some stuff just won't go away. Right. And instead, a lot of this stuff remained as garbage and trash. And obviously, for our purposes here, it becomes a trace or a record of the past. And this past, obviously, because it won't go away, it kind of also seeps into the future. So we get all these heaps of stuff that is buried underneath layers of time, that through which we can, in a way, at least partially reconstruct some of the processes, technological processes, industrial processes, but also advertising and design and so on, that is ingrained into this object. You know, a long time ago, people threw away thinking it was only useless. So. As such, objects, mass-produced objects, become also the measure of time, right? Because if you take organic, it decomposes and then it kind of gets new life in a new generation, which is really interesting. But with industrial objects, we get stuff that, you know, as I'm saying, does not go away. But in not going away, this stuff takes on imprint of time. So we can see the corrosion, really, of time, wear and tear, and rust that affects these problems and give it a sort of like a temporal quality, which we obviously lose in trees, right? Clearly, this is not entirely a thing of industrial period. We have objects from way, way back, right? Ornaments, and I don't know, architecture and sculpture and stuff like that. So there's a lot of stuff, obviously, from periods way before industrial production of objects. But and they also bear imprint of time, and they also give us a sense of how time progresses, and also enables us to really position ourselves in time with regards to the ruination of an object. But the thing with that, with old stuff, to put it that way, is that in comparison to new industrial objects, is that industrial objects come in massive quantities. So there was never as many objects a thousand of years ago than there are today, because, you know, we all know plastic bags are something that will remain, and they probably don't have much historical value, and also don't tell us much about how life was in the past, because they're a relatively new phenomenon. But still, they are becoming a sediment of time in the world that we live in. Now, this brings us to the question that's of the social, economic and technological conditions that structure the time that we live in, which is obviously some sort of iteration of modernity. And modernity is the historical period or phenomena, really, that really, really importantly affected and still does how we go about our lives. And it's, there's a German sociologist, his name is Hartmut Rosa, and he really
structural problems of modernity, and he frames that through a concept of escalation. And Rosa argues that escalation is what is really inbuilt into, obviously, industrial production, what's built into science also, but also in politics, and not least into how human conflicts are resolved or not. And related to escalation is what he calls acceleration, and this is a part of the structure of life in since, let's say, mid-19th century up until today, where everything just kind of speeds up. The production speeds up. We want to have a short time travel between different points. Everything is conditioned to be made quicker and shorter. And the spin-off of that idea that we can see today, on the one hand, is incessant escalation of conflict and war and aggression. And this is also Rosa's argument that we are actually living in a world that is bound to be aggressive, because if we want to speed up stuff, if we want, and this is also an important part of his argument, if we want to control stuff, this is inherently a violent and aggressive approach to not only life, but to the world at large. And the spin-off that I was mentioning comes in form today in digital culture mostly, but as you will see also has a bit of a longer history. It comes as a motto of tech violence, or tech feudalism. And it's called move fast and break things. So there is this idea that technological development and social development also, but we all know that there is always a discrepancy between technological development and the uptake of technological innovations in a society. So that stuff should just be made and thrown away and made new. And this is all part of the whole idea of escalation and acceleration that we talked about before. However, although this is a fairly recent offshoot of modernity, it has a much longer history. For instance, in Jonathan Swift in 18th century, he was and is found in Alida Basman's, she's a cultural memory scholar, and a very nice article that kind of relates text, trace, and trash. And Jonathan Swift exposed the tendency to restlessly and recklessly innovate, which he described as a dialectical process of production and rubbishing. And this was, mind you, 300 years ago. So this is a really deeply, deeply ingrained structural, and obviously this will sound contradictory in this, but still, there's a structural dynamics, because we always tend to think the structure is something fixed, but obviously structures also change, and they give a substance of the richer dynamic of society, kind of. Then it's able to go on. So, and we can see that this is really, and this kind of brings us back to the Romans who had problems. So, always in every single historical period, people have an issue with how things are going, right? For instance, this takes us again, sometime back to ancient Greece, right? Plato had a problem with writing, saying it corrupts memory. And then when books came along, books are no good. People just, they read in their own worlds. And today they are, remember when Aslan when I was a kid, I would always, you know, I wanted to watch the TV, and they would say, no, this is corruption, God, be blamed. And today we have this similar problem with digital technologies, obviously. And the question is, when? You know, is there, like, can this just go on endlessly? Can it just endlessly innovate? Or is there a tipping point? You know, and we're being told that there is a tipping point now in ecological terms, and we probably will be past that point. But then in production of stuff, you know, and in ability of the environment to accommodate all the non-degradable stuff, you know, is there a limit to it? Because again, as when I was a kid, I would, you know, there was this idea that, you know, for instance, the sea, everything went from the sea, it will kind of disappear. Obviously, it doesn't. Seas are really, really polluted, and the Adriatic Sea is one of the most polluted seas globally speaking. If you think away the Pacific Rapids. And this again brings us to one of the probably the central kind of pharmacological innovations. This is plastics, right? Plastic is something that is basically everywhere today, and it's so such a useful material. You know, you can shape it whichever way you want. You can give it that color, that color. You can make it more brittle or more kind of pliable. So it's really a useful material. But then, it's also a material that you just not great. You know, it stays in your eye. It wasn't that when it kind of, you know, enters the body. We know stories about, for instance, fish that eat plastics and die of hunger because they kind of, I don't know, they like the taste or something. And even worse than that, we have microplastics entering metabolic systems, right? You know, binding with fat and stuff like that. And then apparently, I just found this info, we eat about 250 grams of plastic a year, which would make it 2.5 kilos in 10 years, which is like a lot. And especially for people who like to eat good stuff. And also, it's difficult to imagine there's another way out of that because plastic was this synthetic petrochemical plastic started to be massively produced in 1950s. It was obviously also before, but negligible. And in 1950, there was 1.7 million tons of plastic produced. And in 2020, there were 400 million tons of plastic. So this is like a massive increase, right? And we find plastic in wrappings and packaging, in textiles even. And textiles also is one of the, you know, we just buy a new shirt every quarter. And just throw it away and think it goes away, but it doesn't. Then it ends up in Nigeria, in these mountains of textiles that were donated. You know, but that's a different story. And then obviously we also find plastics in just everyday objects, in toys, in computers, in phones. So it's really, really difficult to get rid of. But anyway, and this is, you know, this brings us to the second question, what makes trash trash? As long as we have the opportunity to use and reuse stuff, you know, it would be less stuff. And if you keep it kind of decomposes all the better, right? But when we live in a culture that produces unbelievable amounts of non-degradable stuff. And we also need a culture that disfavors the right to repair. Then we can see that, you know, stuff that can maybe be useful, it becomes non-useful because there's new stuff that is now used. So, and this brings us also to advertising and design. And stuff will always be designed so that new stuff looks better. I don't know how that works, but you know, if you look at, I don't know, two cars, one from 10 years ago and one from today, this from today looks good and this looks old. So, and then the whole psychological setup of the present condition is just wonderful. And this also brings us to the question of value, right? What is valuable? Is it just, you know, a value in how we can use it? You know, it's like an instrument, so like a plastic bag, and then you just throw it away. Or is it value lies elsewhere, for instance, as in culture, right? But then again, trash also comes forward as trash when you start to think about it ecologically, right? Before it was like heaps of things thrown away. It was not a problem if like trash was burned or it was just dug somewhere along the river. The problem emerges when things that you throw away come back. So, and that's when we start to think about trash much more viscerally, much more seeing it as a much more pertinent stuff to our lives. And also, it's not obviously just aesthetic disturbance, but also, as I was mentioning before, it's also neurobiological disturbance because it affects how life can at all be produced. This, I think, should be a strong invitation to us to actually see the present condition as an unprecedented situation, and it should be an invitation for us all to rethink, as the title of this festival also suggests, and reframe and reinvent also not just the mode of production, but also the mode of exchange and ascribing value to stuff. So it's to avoid generating excessive stuff. Now, this is also now a point where the question of memory and trash comes in. So we've seen now there is this sort of like you can set up a really provisional division of modalities in trash. So it's there's trash in the environment which takes on which invites a set of responses. There's obviously trash in our body, and there's also trash in mind. So as regards to the environment, this is like pollution, keeping the food chain, breaking down life cycles, degradation of the environment, moisture, energy, and then trash in the body is similarly related, but you know, there is there's plastics were found in placenta, and there's plastic in salt that we use for cooking. And obviously there's other opportunities for plastic things to enter the body. And then which kind of brings us back now to the today's topic is trash in mind, so to speak. Provisionally begs the question of what we make of trash. So how we approach it, how we deal with it, how we, you know, like it or dislike it, what value, you know, we can find in it. And there's obviously, this is related to the study of industrial heritage, but it's also related to historical research in general, focusing on materials used and methods applied to producing stuff, but then also changes in uses, and changes in function and design and so on. And then there's obviously intimate memories related to trash stuff that once was not trash. His really interesting project, but you know, he can say much more and much more people about the project. This is a kind of fizzy drink. I remember when, you know, I was young at one point in time, and we would go just across the border in Rožna Dolina to Gorizia, and I would get a kind of coke. This was like, wow, you know, this was during the 80s for me, this was. This had value, and I would collect my sister and I would like a wall of cans. Right? And this cans today is probably somewhere buried below some landfill or something. But you know, and this was obviously an object that everything that I drank, but still the object was there. You know, be there to be subjected to my neurological imagination. So when I would always think about objects as inviting or contemplating, really thinking about the world, and this is what seems to be a really, really great thing. Not just to manipulate the world through objects, but also to imagine the world through objects. And I think this is where becomes a really, really nice opportunity, and also dealing with trash also a very good practice of, you know, negotiating the pharmacology of trash. And one of the also very much interesting and I would also say important areas of thinking about trash is also obviously art, right? And arts and trash, not really sure how long that goes, but I am sure that found objects or objets trouvé go back to Picasso in early 20th century, and then Marcel Duchamp with ready-made and assemblages and stuff. And there was a bunch of artists who engaged with bringing objects out of people, forgetting into life again. And for instance, there's a really interesting Slovenian artist also, Stane Jagodić is his name, who just recently had an exhibition. And he, since mid-60s, he's been dealing with assemblages and stuff like that, and collecting stuff from junkyards and buying stuff that kind of, and making this very, very different stuff. And he's always commenting, and has been so for the past 40, 50 years, on militarization and ecology and war. So, very, very interesting. Stuff, obviously, and again, to get back to memory question, thinking about and through trash, right? In a way, I would say constitutes a break or an interruption, in a way, in the fabric of life, because trash is something that's really undesirable. We don't want it, we just want to get rid of it. But the fact is that it is here and we have to deal with it. And so, and as such, it really viscerally and also, you know, symbolically and in terms of body inscribes into individuals, into collectives, and as such also into memories, for instance. And the thing is with trash and memory, it's really very intimate. It's very individual, because a broken toy just means something to the child who broke it, right? And for a rusty tin, will always only mean something, you know, in this way of interpretation, we have to be addressed by it. And for instance, German art historian Abi Warburg at one point also was speaking about stored energy, which is
what makes the object speak. And not only speak, also, you know, kind of touches upon us. And it is this stored energy that I also see what the victim is doing. And now, just to conclude, so trash, I would say, or simply bhakti, garbage, litter, not only makes us remember our past, but to all the problems or challenges that are related to it, also, I would say, invites us to think about the future. So trash, in a way, is something of the past. But by its very being of the past, it's also inherently part of our future. So thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Excellent. It's a bit difficult to begin the stage after all this very clever, clever thoughts and organized thinking. In fact, basically put a movie so get distracted from what I'm going to say. You say now, so I prepare the movie.
Thank you very much, Martin. Now we'll follow the presentation of Enrico. Sorry, I forgot before to say, but please don't leave after the presentation of Enrico, because we will have the workshop with Peter Burke. The title of the workshop is Crushing It Together, so stay with us. Thank you.
So, this happened yesterday, and I'm just preparing a layout that somewhat describes the content of my brain and why I'm not an academic, but I'm a photographer. So, it's going to have this play in the background. Can you see? So, part of the exhibition was the installation of this billboard yesterday, which was really hard to achieve, and I let it play in the background. While I talk about what this project is about, starting from this photo, which I luckily found in London. Just for context, that is a bus stop, obviously, and you're familiar with those billboards that are back illuminated. This was empty. Someone wrote very cleverly, "Stop telling me to bike rack," which is fundamentally my twin that I never met, or I will never meet. And this is where what my work kind of revolves around. In a way, trash, the way that I interpret it, is a human being that tells you something. It's not just a piece of dead material that just exists. It's something that actually is communicating with you. Little disclaimer, like mostly to myself all this morning, I'm always full of theories and opinions about things, and I think to be very articulate, but in reality I take pictures, and that's what I should be speaking to. My realm is sight, sound, and tactility, and behind you there's something for you to pick up. That will complement this presentation. So I'll like speak briefly about the project. This is the fourth iteration. The previous three, if we can say so, is the 2020 Kensington and Chelsea exhibition, where I've been invited to present this project. The first one was I don't have pictures here, but it's all on my website if you're interested. A series of pictures explaining the problem about trash in the same way we're doing with these billboards, but obviously there is not on the back work of the reflection of advertising that constitutes trash and what doesn't. And there's been an academic study, which I'm really happy about, because it organized my thinking better than I could have done myself ever, by the University of Huddersfield in 2021. And the third iteration before this last one is a book that is unfinished, we will probably never finish, in PDF form, that contains a lot of garbage, like both metaphorically and practically. And this is iteration number four that we organized with Rethinkable. The idea was to have billboards throughout town, 22 in fact, and three by 6 meters billboard, and field install and consider the installation of this billboard sort of a performance, sort of reflecting what constitutes art, what constitutes advertising, what is advertising, what is trash, and all these thoughts about rubbish. So thing is, despite my attempts to give the project a very academic twist, like the project actually talks about emotion, like you were saying earlier, like you go to Rosa Lugina and buy Coca-Cola and it was a treasure. So in a way, it just talks about memories, my own memories, personal memories, sometimes borrowed from someone else's experience, but nonetheless, emotions and memories. So the Pepsi story, if you have followed my project in the past, the first memory that I have of trash is this kind of Pepsi Cola in the woods in Czechovac, where I would go and pick mushrooms with my parents, and there was this kind of Pepsi, and it must have been like some point in the 80s, and like since then, and I had to research it like recently, and I think when we spoke about this, I was convinced that Pepsi Cola was basically only sold in Yugoslavia, because I think of the colors, and when I reflected upon it, it was Yugoslavian colors. And Coca-Cola was like, no, Coca-Cola does not exist in Yugoslavia. Turns out it was produced in Serbia since the mid-60s. So I fabricated for, I think, 30 plus years, a reality that just does not belong to the actual facts. So that's very interesting. Just I mentioned this just so to speak, to explain the power that visual memories lay upon us. You know, I created my reality. I just take that I took that for granted, and I've never done the research. Like that was it. Like Pepsi is a Yugoslavian. That's it. Yugo cocktail. Like this is what I literally just said. What is true is that the reality we live is the reality we ourselves shape every day. Our opinions are based and made by the things we experience on a daily basis, the people that we live with, that we work with, or simply cross path with, and the objects, the houses we inhabit, and so on. Everything constitutes a part of our ecosystem, and so that's trash. As we said, because it's now things that's now part of our ecosystem, so something that we can ignore. Once we have leaves, now we've got tons of all sorts of rubbish around us, and that's a fact we cannot deny. Trash is everywhere. And is both produced by ourselves and witnessed as a passive observer. For some we're directly responsible, we produce it on a daily basis, and for other kind of trash, we're just, again, like passive spectators. Branded trash, this is where what the project is about. Branded trash is a sneaky one. I can read for myself, but I call it the long hand of branding, logo culture under capitalism, silently whispering something in our ears, like, hey, I exist, I'm here, just look at me. Even post-mortem, these objects manage to talk to us. He might not notice it, but it exists in the form of abandoned cans, packaging, bags, containers, whatever you can think of as trash. It's there. So all sorts of objects and materials placidly bearing a logo, silently advertising the presence, but at the same time denying any responsibility about themselves. So they're just there, seemingly unharmful, but they do harm, they do talk to us. So can you blame a can for just existing? You can't blame a can of Coca-Cola for being abandoned on the street, can you? Sorry, the fan. So I'm just writing, I'm just quite pleased with myself.
That's
fun. So branded trash exploits these human weaknesses in favor of self-advertisement. Well, that advertisement, depending on whether you're American or English, you say that. It's genius. You just literally have to do nothing. You just have to give the product to someone and just let them be. Like, let them be human, let them be, you know, sloppy like humans are, and exploit this trait. The blame is always on us. Like, there's no way around this. Like, it's like the CO2 contribution to Ryan there. Like, add €1 to contribute to us getting rid of CO2. No, you pay the €1. Why do I have to pay? And I think my project is about shifting perspective. It's an invitation, a provocation to change perspective on how we look at things. Or rather, to start looking at things for what they actually are. So to rethink, I'd like to be both to conclude with the rethink element, how things look at first, the chances that what we think something actually is the product of our own bias. Maybe an abandoned piece of trash is not just someone's fault, it's intentional and ingenious advertising. And I conclude, also matching with what's happening in the back. If you're in doubt, just bin it. Like, next time you see something that doesn't belong to the environment you're in the woods and you see a piece of trash, just take it to the bin. You're going to do the planet a massive favor. And that's it. Thank you very much, and I invite you to go and have a little bit more.
Thank you to the lecturers for these wonderful presentations. Are there probably some questions from the public? Okay. If not, I will propose that we prepare the stage for the workshops with Peter Burg from the University of Udine. Thank you again for being here.
So I didn't know I was getting a contract with the University of Udine. Thank you so much, this would have been fantastic. Trash it, bin it, can it, can you? There was this workshop, cool, invitational, don't panic. You were supposed to bring trash to the workshop, don't panic, don't panic. It's fine, because we just learned both scientifically as well as artistically that trash is also within you, right? So you are not full, but there is enough trash to be found conceptually, psychologically, emotionally, socially. But there's also, I've checked it, this Max Cafe has a fantastic big full bin of trash that we can actually reuse because it's already trash. So this workshop is supposed to be kind of a not a frontal thing, so I would just like us to open up this auditorium and just do chairs in a little half circle. It won't hurt, it will be good fun. And if you want to hide or run away, if you run away to the toilet, there's a trash can there too. So you can still do the homework. Thank you. Yeah, like if you can use it for that. So we are reusing these posters. Mind you, these posters are really becoming, they're actually getting value. Like these posters were, yeah, not sure how much value they had 2 weeks ago, Enrico. Not much, but now they're, you know, they're getting viral. Yeah, social media is giving them value. Like they went viral. So we've got trash as background. You can also, of course, cut this out. But look at me. I brought. I did homework for my own workshop, and this is really from my trash at home. Yeah. So please come in, sit down. Sit down. Please, and you will throw away your Friday afternoon anyway. So don't. But if there's anyone out there, Cheshikdo, Tango, Ti odpadki, za stran reč, ne, Martin, jaz našel še eno, za stran reč, za peg reč, we can actually solve it with the poor Slovenian with only two words that we can use dialect. So there must be dialectal things. So what's the Primorska or the Notranska or the Prekmurska word for trash? Or for, I'm just killing time before people sit down, so that's my... So who brought